We've been talking about the current obsession with digital life logging, but you don't necessarily need fancy technology to pay obsessive attention to the details of your life. And people have been keeping diaries and journals for centuries. Writer Sarah Manguso keeps a daily diary, and she has complicated feelings about it. Her new book, Ongoingness, is a short meditation on journal writing and also about how becoming a new mother changed her feelings about living her life on a page. Steve Paulson asked her to read a passage from the beginning.
I started keeping a diary 25 years ago. It's 800,000 words long. I didn't want to lose anything. That was my main problem. I couldn't face the end of a day without a record of everything that had ever happened. I wrote about myself so I wouldn't become paralyzed by rumination, so I could stop thinking about what had happened and be done with it. More than that, I wrote so I could say I was truly paying attention. Experience in itself wasn't enough. The diary was my defense against waking up at the end of my life and realizing I'd missed it. Imagining life without the diary, even 1 week without it, spurred a panic that I might as well be dead.
Sarah, it seems like you set up an almost impossible task for yourself, as if your diary could be a record of your entire life. Is that kind of what you were trying to do?
That is exactly what I was trying to do, yes. And I did understand in very basic terms that it's essentially impossible to keep a record of every moment of one's life, all the sensory information and all of the words that were spoken and all of the things that I thought, but I still had this anxiety that I had to maintain the diary anyway. I had to at least try. It felt, as I say in the book, as necessary to my hygiene as bathing.
So this gives you pleasure, it sounds like, to write in your diary every day.
Pleasure and also very much a kind of relief.
Now, you say that keeping this diary became an absolute compulsion, and that became a problem. I mean, you call it a vice.
I call it a vice in order to kind of counteract the immediate response of people say, oh, that's so virtuous. I attempt to do that every January. I make a New Year's resolution, or I don't have the discipline. And really, the practice of keeping my diary was something utterly outside willpower or discipline. In fact, it would have taken willpower and discipline not to keep it. That's why I call it a vice in the book. In my 20s, I stopped to write every time I happened upon beauty. It was an old-fashioned project. Romances were examined in detail. Each one was new. My 30s were filled not by romance, but by other writing. Virtuous activities such as exercise and housekeeping also were logged. The rhapsodies of the previous decade thinned out. Toward the end of my 30s and into my 40s, entries became further abbreviated. Most of the sentences started with verbs. I is omitted from as many sentences as possible, occurring only for emphasis. I logged work and health, symptoms, medications, side effects. Housekeeping was no longer noted. If I read or looked at or heard something extraordinary, I named it. But as one ages, fewer things fall into this category. Reflection disappeared almost completely.
And my sense is that the biggest change came once you became pregnant and your son was born. Why did that have such a big impact on what you did in your diary?
Well, I was prepared for all the cliches of parenthood, the exhaustion, simply just not having enough time. But those things weren't what ultimately arrested my obsessive daily maintenance of the diary. What arrested it was that I started inhabiting time in a new way. I realized that I was simultaneously forgetting more than I'd ever thought I could bear, and I was also remembering more than I'd ever thought I could.
Well, it sounds like you're saying that the experience of pregnancy and motherhood changed the way you thought about memory, about time itself, and about writing.
Yes, all of those things changed. The other strange thing that happened to my memory very soon after I gave birth to my son is that these very old pre-verbal memories started to surface. And I had always been such a doubter whenever anybody would say, oh, I have this very early memory of going hiking in the rainforest with my father when I was 4 months old. I can remember the way the trees looked, or I remember what it was like to be in my playpen or my crib. And I just thought, oh, you know, you've seen a photograph. This has all been projected onto you. You've listened to people describing these events. I just didn't believe it. I didn't have any preverbal memories of my own. And so it seemed impossible. But I had so many experiences of being with this pre-verbal creature, my tiny son. And as I was feeding him with a spoon one day, if you've ever fed a baby with a spoon, you know,
it's very messy, I might say.
It's not quite as simple as just delivering the food via the spoon into the baby's mouth. I mean, you attempt that. Some of the food, you know, reaches its goal, and then much of the rest of it sort of dribbles down the baby's chin and jaw. And one of the first times I ever did that, I suddenly had this incredibly vivid sense memory of someone doing that to me, of feeling the spoon scraping my chin, and of tasting that already tasted food and feeling, ugh, you know, this dribbled food, this pre-tasted food doesn't taste as good as the food that got in during the first attempt at feeding me. It really felt as though my memory were trying to help me understand what it was like to be my son. It was like this emergency empathy.
Do you think you were actually remembering something that happened to you when maybe you were a year old or even less?
I really do think that, because the most vivid of these early memories was a memory of being in my crib, and the collection of sense memories around this was just so vivid and they were so extensive. There was this panel on my crib that was orange, and it had a lot of little things that I could twiddle with. There was a crank that I could turn. There was a bell that I could ring. The bell was silver. I know what the screw looked like. There was a mirror. It was in the bottom left-hand corner. I can see it. I can hear it. I can feel it in my hand. And I know I've never seen a photograph of it.
Well, it seems that there's kind of a profound philosophical question here. I mean, if our sense of self is basically built on our memories, what happens if our memories change? I mean, does our sense of self change?
I don't know. I don't know whether my sense of self changed, but certainly my beliefs about the role of memory, and certainly about the roles of enforced memory through keeping a diary, were changed utterly by this experience. I've been basically the same person since I had my son. I know this isn't true for all new mothers, especially those who are younger than I am, and most of them are, but I feel like a monolith now. I've emerged from a gauntlet, and it has something to do with having become a mother, and it has something to do with having become qualitatively old, and it has something to do with having run out of time and life to perceive and ruminate and record my minutes and days in the diary. What I'm saying is that I have become, in a way, inured to the passage of time. I'm not really paying attention to what's happening to me anymore, no longer observing steadfastly the things that have changed since yesterday.
Now, one of the central tensions in your book is whether writing this diary got in the way of living. I mean, of actually experiencing the world rather than kind of always observing it from a distance. Have you sorted this out?
I think the tension between the need to record and the need to do anything but record is less terrifying to me now than it once was. There's a sort of bittersweet anecdote in the book about declining a ride from New York to Boston with a friend who would only live a few more years. But, you know, of course, not knowing that at the time, I said, no, you know, I'm going to take the Greyhound so I can just sit and write in this little book for 4 hours, because the need for me to do that is greater than the need for me to be with my friend. I'm less likely to make that choice now.
Sarah Manguso's book is called Ongoingness, The End of a Diary. She talked with Steve Paulson.